congratulations on the film.
Thank you.
This is incredible. It's an incredible story. How did you first find it? How did it come to your attention?
I think it came, it was one of those rare moments in my career where two of the producers, Nicole Rocklin and Blythe Faust, had secured the life rights to the reporters depicted in the film and the editors. They approached me, and I think at that point I was editing Win Win or possibly shooting Win Win, and I just didn't have the brain space for it. I thought, wow, it's really compelling, it's really interesting. I'd never done a kind of based on actual events story, and I couldn't wrap my head around it. So I said, thank you, but no thank you. I just can't, I'm not a great multitasker either. And about a year later, they came back to me. And at that point, I had a little bit more breath, and they said, look, just sit with us again. Let's just talk to you about it. And they did, and I said, great, let's have coffee. And I was sitting there listening. I'm like, how did I pass on this? A really interesting story, and I feel like maybe I'm the right person to tell it for a lot of reasons, personal and professional. And so I signed on. I said, look, I did something I'd never done before. I said, look, I'm really interested. I'm writing something else right now, but why don't I start, sign on as a director, and then we'll hire a writer, and I'll oversee the writing of it, and then I'll direct it, and I'll do a pass on it if I need to. And we hired Josh Singer shortly thereafter. But Josh's first trip up to Boston, we were sending him up there to meet everyone, and I tagged along because I wanted to be there for the first introductions, and I was just instantly taken with the people and the story. And right after that long week up there, I called Josh and said, hey, I'm going to jump on this with you. I'm not going to wait for a draft. I want to be involved from the ground up. And he said, great, because we already had a good banter, a good back and forth. And I'll say there's something about, I've researched a lot of movies, maybe because there was so much material, and obviously because we're looking at through the lens of journalists. Mm-hmm. But we instantly felt like we were investigating their investigation. That was really clear to us. And we're kind of running around town like two idiots who didn't really know. You know, we both lived in Boston, but as you know, that's a tricky city to navigate. Mm-hmm. And so we really were idiots in that regard. But trying to piece together this case, and it just felt really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Considering the state of print journalism today, do you consider this a salute to something we're losing, or as a reminder of what we can't afford to lose?
Both, right? I mean, it is both. You're right. I mean, it's the industry's taken such a hit. I don't know. I don't think we recover from it ever. I think there has to be some new invention, some new model that keeps, especially at a local level, high-level investigative journalism functioning. And I think local is the key word there, really, because there's still some strong papers, New York Times, Washington Post, some of the other papers that have managed to stay strong. The Boston Globe's doing okay. It's cut reporters by quite a bit, but Spotlight Team, it's actually increased by two reporters. So, but more or less, it's all these small papers across the country. You know, you guys know tens of thousands of reporters have lost their jobs. There's been, you know, dozens of Metro Dailies have closed. So what's the answer? Who's keeping an eye on things in these communities? Who's doing it? Not people going to work every day or raising families or going to school. It's or whatever else you do. It's like we need reporters. We need boots on the ground. These aggregate sites aren't enough. They're good. They're helpful. But we need a new model. And someone said to me, you know, do you think this will inspire a whole new wave of journalists that didn't grow up on All the President's Men? And it's humbling to think of, but I hope it also inspires innovators to say, okay, what's the new model? Because no one's cracked it, right? Mm-hmm. The one thing we know is people need to pay for their news. Something that good shouldn't be free. I don't want free sushi, you know? I want to make sure I want to pay, and I want to pay good for it. But we need to pay for our news. And that whatever that model is, I think we need to figure it out, and we need to figure it out fast.
Have a movie about investigating crimes, most of the time you get to see the crime in some way.
Yeah.
Were you tempted to show like a flashback or something with molestation?
I mean, the closest we come is that opening, but you're right. It's really not the inciting crime, is it? It's just an example, I think, which is a much tougher thing to actually... It's not a murder, and we didn't feel like we needed to show the abuse. The reason we opened the movie with that scene in Boston is because we think that speaks to the greater theme of the movie, which is a culture and a society of not only secret, but complicity and deference, right, which are our central themes, ultimately. I think it's what makes this movie much more universal than the story of reporters going after a big institution like the Catholic Church. So that was the reason we had that scene at the beginning, because, you know, there was newspapers, police, lawyers, priests, parents. Everybody had an idea of what was going on, and nobody did anything. Why? Those are the big questions, I think, that we really wanted to raise with this film. I mean, we've shown this movie to a lot of people now, and I've had so many Catholics come up to me and say, I remember this one priest. I remember hearing about it. You never would go on a camping trip with Father O'Malley. We knew that. And, like, all these little pieces, and literally that has been said to me, but people didn't put it together because it was almost beyond the realm of imagination that this could exist on this level. That this really decent institution could be party to this. And I think that's even for the reporters back in 2001, that was hard for them to wrap their heads around. They just couldn't believe it until they got into the church's file cabinets and read it for themselves. And I think that's why that very emotional scene with Mike Resendez, it's not about his ego in this story. That's about trying to actually digest the truth, which was a hard one. It still is today.
Have you courted or received any response on this from the Vatican or from Catholic officials?
We have started to now, and more than, a lot of it has been sort of preemptive comments from several archdioceses, Chicago, Boston, O'Malley, Father O'Malley came out, Cardinal O'Malley. It seemed to be really tacitly praising the investigation and the impact it had and nudging the church towards reform, which is, as the reporter said, that's a home run for us. My only concern is that I think there's been a lot of positive movement, momentum. Certainly Pope Francis seems like a pretty decent guy and seems to be a forward-thinking man and an inclusive man in a really wonderful way. But that's a big institution, and that change comes slow. And I think everyone would like to be reminded of the fact that this wasn't just a problem back in 2001, 2002. It persists. We need to remain vigilant. We need to demand transparency and action. There needs to be more concrete change within the church that we can point to and say, okay, these steps are now in place to ensure that this type of abuse will never happen again. We would demand that of any institution in our society. Certainly, the church should be held accountable.
You have a scene set at the Red Sox game.
Yeah.
Did any of the extras get a little too rambunctious or want to try to muscle their way into the shot?
They didn't try. They did. keep in mind, we were shooting that game. We couldn't control the stadium.
Right.
I wanted to get it live. It took 9 innings to get a page and a half scene. Because we would have scenes where we'd be shooting. We shot that on some long lenses, so I'm a good 40 feet from the action, shooting through crowd. And some people didn't even see us, right? But they would be walking up, and suddenly I'd see, someone standing right in front of the camera saying, "Hey, it's Mark Ruffalo. Hey, man." and literally in one case, one guy said, "Can I get you a beer?" And Mark, being the nicest guy on the planet, said, "No, it's okay." Totally dropping out of the scene. "No, it's okay. He said, "What are you drinking?" He said, "It's non-alcoholic." And he's like, "Non-alcoholic?" Didn't go over well at Fenway, as you can imagine.
Right.
Anyway, he eventually moved on and went back to the scene. I still don't think he realized he walked into the scene. But 4 innings later, this guy shows back up. He goes, "Hey, Ruffalo, non-alcoholic." the whole section clapped and was looking at my DP like, "Oh, boy, we're going to be here all night." That happened. And the other funny thing was the Red Sox were horrible that year. And the whole scene is about the fact that they can't get a hit. Mm-hmm. And in both this season and in the movie, they were not good at that time. And, of course, they won on like a 12-run explosion in one inning. Everyone was cheering. And the scoreboard was running up, and we just had to sit and wait for them to stop scoring. As a Yankee fan, I took that as a personal slip.
Right.
Personal.
In a way, Boston is very much a character in this film, but not done the usual way that other directors do, where they do swooping shots of the city. There's shots in there throughout. What special care did you take into making Boston a stand? Because there's so much character within the city itself.
Yeah. That's a great question, actually. It's funny you say that, because I was actually being leaned on and encouraged to get swooping shots. it looks good. You see it in every movie. I just saw a comedy the other day, and they just had swooping shots of the city. And I'm always like, wow, anyone can get their swooping shots now. What do they mean? Not to say sometimes, look, I like them. There's something aesthetically pleasing, but what's it telling us? Mm-hmm. Now, you know, you could argue, well, it's a movie about the city, so you need to see the city. And like, maybe. But for me, this is a movie about the city from the inside out, really. And that scares some studio people because they're like, they want the movie to feel big because they're spending money on it. So I just think just know that that is a discussion we have, right? Even my DP, we talked a lot about it. And, you know, what do you think? It doesn't feel. We just didn't feel it, you know. And that's really what it comes down to. It's sort of like how you're feeling. And there's moments we had like that, but they never seemed essential to the story we were telling. I literally had one in the studio, and then we had a great studio, Open Road, and they're like, hey, we'll give you whatever money it costs if you just want to go up in that helicopter and shoot some stuff. And I almost did it, because who doesn't want to go up in a helicopter and shoot stuff, you know? But my DP is like, why? We decided we're not doing it. I'm like, yeah, no, I don't know why. It just sounded cool. But did I answer you? Was that your question, more or less?
Yeah, but in a way, I thought Boston did come through in the film.
Yeah, look, I've had a few high points with this movie. One is hearing from a lot of journalists, investigative journalists specifically, of just saying, wow, you got us, that's us, good job. Not a high praise, just like a pat on the back, attaboy, and that's enough for me. The other has been survivors who have come forward, both. A lot of survivors have come up to us who have, we've screened the movie for certain organizations like SNAP, that have been at screenings, the survivors depicted in the movie, and then some have just stood up after Q&As and said, I'm a survivor, and thank you. I think you represented us well and told our story in raising awareness, and that means the world to us. And the third thing, I think, was we were in Boston screening the movie last year, and we had a lot of people come up to us and said, wow, that's a really good Boston.
Okay.
Like, that feels like us. And you know, I mean, you may or may not know, but Boston is protective. Like, you know, ask Matt Damon. He's always like, no one gets it right. And it's a really tough town to get right. Mm-hmm. He's right. It's a really tricky town to get right because it's so culturally unique to anywhere else in the country. And it's tough to identify, and it's easy to overplay. But we had a lot of help, and that's because we had 6 reporters and editors who know that city inside and out, leaning into every bit of this movie. Mm-hmm. So I think Josh Singer and I, you guys just met, super nice and talented guy. That was a great, great advantage to us.
Can I take it a step further and ask you, had this story unfolded in a, you know, Butte or you know, Miami or something, would it have been as resonant as it is now happening in Boston?
That's a good question. I don't know. I mean, there is something that it is, you know, arguably the most Catholic of American cities, and the impact it had there wasn't lost on a lot of people. I think it's easy to fault the city of Boston for this. I think they should be celebrated. I think the fact that this story broke there of all places is pretty extraordinary, and I think says a lot about the people of that community that they're willing to confront it and are still willing to confront it. But I do think it probably added some power. I couldn't speak to that, but I think it probably did. You know, we screened this. We premiered. Our world premiere was in Venice, Italy, at the Venice Film Festival, and it was pretty extraordinary to screen this movie for a theater full of 1,700 Italians. I imagine the Catholic rate was pretty high. I'm going to put it somewhere in the 98 percentile. And to speak with the Italian press and hear from the Italian people and really listen to them grapple with it, even through their questions, was really extraordinary because the church still holds such sway in that country, unlike Ireland, where they now have a different relationship with the Catholic Church precisely because of this story and some of the ones that have since come about. But that, to me, is really interesting also.
I'm curious about your process with working with Michael Keaton, because he's kind of a larger-than-life person. He's very energetic, and he has a lot of mannerisms and things that are natural to him. And I think that in the movie, he's kind of taking down a bit those things.
Yeah.
Did that come from your direction, the subject matter, just meeting the real life?
Yeah, no, we drugged him. He doesn't know this, but every day in his coffee, just a few drops, bring him down. I remember distinctly talking to him about trust the stillness, trust the quiet, because he does a lot, and he's so interesting to watch. He makes little moments, and you don't even see it all until you're in the edit room, and you're like, yeah, that's good. He's really good. He's just not a big presence. He's not just a guy who's had a long career. He's like an animal. He's an instinct. He's a really instinctual actor. You know, I don't. Sometimes it's hard to see his craft. Certain guys like Ruffalo, you're just watching craft. He's just a tactician. You see a craftsman. He's building this character physically, emotionally. Keaton's more squirrely about it. You're like, is he here? Is he dialed in? And then when he is, boom. He's just great to watch. And that was the cool thing about this movie. We had all these great actors, and a lot of their approaches were really different. And that's my job. My job is to make sure I get everyone on the same team. That is like being a player coach to some extent. I've got to get them all in the same place, in the same headspace, in the same world. And a lot of them was a lot of the movie was about restraint, because these guys are restrained. They're real-life reporters. They're serious people. They're restrained. They're not flashy. They're not showy. It doesn't mean they're not passionate. It doesn't mean they're not charming. It can be exciting. It can be, you know, if you spend time with Resendez, you're going to realize he can flare up occasionally. But I think we were trying to capture that, you know, and I think really with Michael it was finding those moments. And we talked a lot about it and did a great job with it. Liab's another one. Liab did an amazing job of catching Marty Baron. Marty's so up here, you know, he just leads with his brain, full stop, you know, nothing else. Liab's a big dude, you know, he's used to being more physically involved, and like getting him into the pen, that was tricky.
Even with the subject matter of this film, one of the things I really enjoyed about the film was that there's an intimacy to it, like you said earlier, with the city and the reporters, and I want to congratulate you.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I think that's something that starts at the script stage, right? And they're trying to find those moments, because look, there could be a knock on this film that we don't spend enough time with the reporters' personal lives. And I'm sure some people want that, because like you want to know, what are they like when they go home, and how does that impact their life? But we just made the decision that wasn't as interesting to us. What was interesting to us was the work. So we had to find our glimpses into their humanity, into the rest of their beings, in just small moments here and there. And one, you need very good acting to do that. And two, as filmmaker, that's my job. Like, go find that. What makes these people feel multidimensional, feel real, feel more than just caricatures of real people? And that's, you know, I think some of that is just trust. Trust. And trusting that if you do build it that way, that the audience will connect. And I think a lot of this movie is built in its pace and tone. I credit my editor, Tom McCardle, I've made 5 movies with. Like, we really, really had to bang this one out. And immediately, a lot of the movie held together. The script was really strong. And the procedural element dictated that it had to be in a certain order, right? The investigative element of it. So that happened. Really, it was just then finding the tone within those scenes and transitions. And that's ultimately, I think, where films are made and lost.
Thank you.
Cool, guys. Have a good day, everyone.
You too.